Yeah, Houston's an easy one.
Oh, okay.
Houston's also an easy exit.
Well, that's fine, so you have your two instances inside the enclosure.
No, this is not a piece of the ontology, this is an example. This is an example, the ontology, this is an example of how the relation, how you can describe the properties of this particular individual, or one, which is beyond the ontology, using the ontology itself.
Fine, but you see that we need to discuss what is this metal language, what is the entity within which you describe it, which
is outside of the ontology. Of course.
Yeah.
Like everything else, I prefer to do that.
Sure.
But this, what I intended is not, was not the point
sorry.
Of this
meeting. Sorry.
Aldo's out of time. We have one more question.
I just have one comment about your segment of the slides. The circle of poles. If you could go back to
which one?
Yeah, that
there you go.
Okay. So actually, this is one reason why, like, when I was talking about our methodology of actually having a classification bill, because all you need to show a theory consistently is come up with one model. Right? As long as one model exists, the theory is consistent. Mm-hmm. But the problem is to try to understand all these other models, especially in the bad and the max precision limited coverage, to know that that there aren't any other models of the axioms that you might implicitly assume would be consistent, but in fact those models aren't consistent with topology. And that's something that's an even bigger problem sometimes to identify, is the one that you actually eliminate. So this slide really kind of think illustrates a lot of the problems.
Okay, thanks. Okay, we're at 1:52. Reviewing the major technical issues and addressing them, also considering the technical next steps. So what we want to do is identify what we consider the top issues of bringing our upper ontologies together to your custodians and key participants, the issues in doing so from their perspective. I'm going to probably display my initial issues to bring that up. But this discussion, what we want to do is basically save the next steps for the technical issues for the last 30 minutes. So that whenever we make that transition, you know, everyone will know. The first 90 minutes or so, if that's going to be, we may not need the 90 minutes, for example. What we want to do is frame the issues, roughly 4 to 6 issues, maybe 5 minutes to frame the issue and discuss, and 5 minutes to draw conclusions. So, and what I want to do is just for discussion purposes, bring up the initial slides that I had this morning. And maybe these issues are still issues, but feel free to identify new issues. And we'll eliminate some that I have on my initial slide set. And we'll talk about those. We'll try to identify 4 to 6.
It's on the agenda.
No, it is. So it's under the slide set in the morning. So just page up. Yeah,
that's
the
slides.
Right.
Yeah.
See, we could always, I think we're going to need to prioritize these two to start with most folks first.
Yeah, I agree.
Especially considering yeah.
Next, go across. We're beyond the outline. Okay, now I think we're in fact beyond points of agreement, but let's, go to the next one. So, We only have, I think, 1, 2, 3, go to the next one, Alan. Okay, we're basically, what this tried to do is synopsize the issues that were identified during our email discussions. Now, given our discussions today and the presentations, these may not be the issues anymore. So what we want to do is kind of prioritize, as Mike was suggesting, maybe 4 to 6 issues, and then talk about those and see what the next steps are technically for us. So it's open to the entire room. Okay, yeah, Tom.
So I missed Doug Lynette's presentation this morning, so I don't know if Doug brought this up, but it seems to me that when you, up until now, a lot of these ontologies have been kind of moving in isolation from one consistent state to another consistent state, or relatively consistent state. But I think one of the ideas here is to see if these things can actually lean against each other. And of course, the idea with it, an upper ontology, is that the purpose is presumably that there are lower ontologies that are going to potentially be exploiting it or using it almost as a service. And as we're moving into these things becoming more mission critical and depending on each other, there seems to be an issue in my mind that I don't know if it's being brought up, which is perhaps it's below the idea of just coming up with some general common ontological elements that we can agree upon, which is brought up in the previous presentation, which was the actual idea of identifying these things in a generalized, the ontological elements in a generalized way, in a non-domain specific way, so that they can be presumably versioned and we can deal with change management. Because if we are going to map one ontology to another, then that's the temporal thing. Because over time, one ontology is going to move and the concepts in there are going to change their meaning. And if we're just assuming that I'm going to get the thing and it's called person or whatever it is, that the meaning is going to change over time. So I guess that's one thing that I was wondering whether or not it had been actually raised.
Well, okay, let's try to clarify that. I think you referred to Nicola's, and maybe this is the common and minimal vocabulary at maybe a meta level for making distinctions. Would you say that that's what you're talking about?
Well, I don't think this is actually just the low vocabulary. It's actually just simply maybe this is just a highly technical thing, which is just a system for identifying and versioning ontological elements without any vocabulary, like this.
A theorem first.
I think the question you're bringing up actually will be addressed in tomorrow morning session where you are going to be a panelist. What we're trying to do here actually is continue a set of work that started about 6 to 8 weeks ago by these group of people, and we have to draw conclusions. So let's hold that thought for tomorrow.
There's another kind of question, I think that's a simple answer.
Okay.
The simple answer is that theories don't change. What you think you're doing is modifying the theory. What you're doing is actually creating the theory. So if you build something on the other theory, it stays there. It doesn't change. Nothing changes. People don't make changes in the group. They don't need to. If you want to move forward and adopt that new theory, that's something you need to do by making a new ontology underneath out of the number of these things. If you were then positively deciding you were going to bring in this new group, and you're sensible, you'll probably manage to test them. Because it shouldn't be the case that if someone can make some change, apparently make some change in that theory, and without your knowing it, you find that you're losing on
Yeah, rather than this exploratory discussion, what I'd like to do first is identify the issues, right, that we want to address, and then we'll talk about it. But so what we're trying to do is, I was trying to get is whether you had a specific issue that you needed to address among the upper ontology custodians, for example, that come together for the technical next steps for aligning, intersecting, mapping upper ontologies. So I'd like to see candidate issues first, and then we'll compile a list, 4 to 6, prioritize those, and then discuss. Who is next? Pat, maybe?
Yeah, the issue I'd like to hear discussed is whether, after listening to each of these presentations, whether there's a feeling that we might want to explore several possible ways of relating the upper ontologies in parallel rather than choose one.
Okay, can we capture that?
You taking it, Peter, or what? You want me to capture?
Yeah. We're going to throw these issues back up on the screen.
Is this the how to identify common ontologies? Is this the issue? Common ontologies?
That's one possible. Well, yeah. Matthew presented one possibility of having high level lattice. Okay. Another possibility, I think Doug brought up, looking at the relationships directly. The other possibility of looking for a common subset.
I think that's what Chris was smiling about, because we appear to be agreeing.
Doing it for like 12 years. We can do both. It's probably better to capture it than last place.
Eventually, yeah.
maybe there are only two methods.
Okay, so
I'm ready to think of that. You have to sort of spell out very clearly.
And keep it relatively simple. So, and we'll try to capture it up here.
The first two items on that list are strongly related: modularity and mapping. It seems to me that the general point under which they both fall is. How do the existing upper ontologies relate to one another? So that's the question, how do they relate? And in order to answer that, you have to first understand the similarities and differences. And then you need to determine what mechanisms exist for expressing those relationships, whether you can map them, whether you can have modules that cross back and forth in some way, whether you can have formal lattices, whatever. So agree and understand the differences, and then how you're going to relate the meanings between the two ones. And then another issue which plays into that.
Okay, let's try to get these.
I've got all this right here. If you want, you can put on a shoe.
That's an idea. You only have one of these, right?
Right. Okay. Pull it out. It's not super. Put it down for the time being.
Put it up.
We need it.
First issue, how to relate the various upper ontologies, and then breakdown, right? Agreements, disagreements, understanding the differences, and then how do we do it? There's actually other alternatives, right? Where there could be registries and libraries up here. I think different folks have mentioned that.
That's not registry and libraries.
Yeah.
But one on one is kind of like those people who are more concerned.
There's an important thing, though. That is, for instance, the relationship between them, whereas registry doesn't.
logical relations, right?
Yeah.
Between.
And registries, libraries. I mean, libraries, again, they sound more like registries, but they could, in fact, be.
Yeah, these are ways of making them available, right?
Yes.
As opposed to reducing the relationship.
Well, except that Dolce, the foundational ontologies, you intended them to, at least some of them.
Yeah, but I agree. The term library is just related to their idea.
Okay.
But I would say that lattices are not enough because there are. That is only imply the kind of inclusion relation. We also need to document other relationships.
Yes, but I think the micro theories or context, whatever you want to call them, overlap a great deal with the question of alternative theories.
Yeah, well, also with modules.
Exactly the relationship between context for micro theory and what would happen to the lattice is something I'm still not clear about. So
you could put micro theories in a lattice.
Right.
If you want.
And, I mean, one other thing that I, you know, perhaps under here that I would include is what Michael was talking about this morning, Michael Gruninger. So, relations among the ontologies, so it may be that you find a minimal set of axioms and prove the formal properties that he suggested. So that might, you know, that's under the understanding of similarities and differences, I guess, right?
Or evaluation.
Yes.
Okay, so this is going to sound like a joke, but I think we're making an ontological error here.
Okay.
which is, all these things are treating ontologies as if they were sort of black boxes or something, whereas probably the most useful insight we've had in the last 15 years, about 15 years, was that you should think in terms of the elementary particle structure of these atoms and think in terms of what are the 10 or 20 or 30 most important attributes or properties or aspects of ontologies that you want to facet out, that you want to factor out, that you want to explicitly talk about. Not think in terms of an ontology as a blob with a line leading to another ontology. That's too simple, and that's basically you need to evolve beyond that.
So maybe facet/dimensions?
Yeah.
Well, but that kind of comes through if the ontology is modular.
I think Doug is right. You don't want to focus on just relations between the blob and the ontology. Mapping is really more, the lattice thing gives you that impression, modules gives you that impression. But mapping gives you a different impression.
Can you find your brain?
Specific yes. Terms, yes. And you need all those again. Yes.
So maybe actually include facets or dimensions
might
down here.
Potentially, right. The biggest benefits as well, because it shows up a lot of the disagreements and things like that, which gives you learning. So
Mike used the expression that I really like, the theory morphism. I don't know. This is what you meant by that, but that's what I understood.
No, I think that was funny.
That's John Bateman.
Okay,
John
Bateman. I had all. I just
someone's part. Sorry
about my. Oh,
sorry.
John, are you still on?
But anyway, I like that idea, theory morphism. I think it captures it, in my mind at least, the idea that.
And there are John Bateman. Are you using any kind of video from there with you coming over the net?
No.
You're right. We're just doing some notes on Mike Oswald's machine.
Are you on the on the meeting page?
Yeah, I'm looking at both the meeting page. Are you going on the wiki or the wiki?
On the wiki. If you refresh the page, most of what is shown there is up on the meeting page.
Yeah, refresh the wiki page.
Okay. Oh, you're on the wiki page. Okay, so we're looking there. So I'd like to just add to that, which I agree very much. You have to start taking the ontologies apart. You start having to have a much finer grain size, and you need to be finding morphisms between the component theories. And it is the ontology graph, which we had, which I showed, which was the development graph that we're using in the heterogeneous toolset, which still was supposed to tell us more about. That is the kind of relationship between theories, between theories, which I think we're going to need when we relate to ontologies. Certainly not having this notion of lattice and inclusion, because as many people said, that is not enough, and it does lead to this expression that we're putting like monolithic ontology together, which is a problem.
Yeah. One point that the Dagobert pulled in, he wasn't able to make the afternoon meeting, was the suggestion that when we do mappings, it might be profitable to start by mapping within a particular context. So you take a context in one ontology, a comparable context in another, and then attempt to map within that context before you move that slide.
So this is going to Doug's comment that there might be facets.
I'm not sure where it fits here. Somewhere in there, the question is whether when you get to detailed mapping, so they're isolating contexts first and trying to map within the context.
I would also include up here how to relate the various upper ontologies, prospective tools and languages, right? So John identified CASL or CASL. Morphisms are coming from, you know, algebra and category theory, but tools and languages that we might identify. For example, if we all agreed to use CASL, for example, to map our ontologies. I don't know if that's something we want to do.
Can I add here that it's not really the one of the things which we're working on is the ability here to just take the specifications in different languages. So the common logic would be a possibility. I mentioned that we'd already taken a whole bunch of Sumo on the middle level, so we're taking the information to a KIP. So it's not really the language that's being used. It's much more important the structuring mechanisms which we then put on top of any kind of specification that's coming in. I think that's the real.
I think we all are implicitly assuming exactly that.
Yeah. And one thing that would be good also to come out of this is, you know, beyond talking, you know, about, you know, mapping, about biases and all this kind of stuff, to actually have a list of open problems that we can walk away from here to say, mm-hmm. you know, exactly pin down, perhaps in restricted cases, you know, how is, you know, the concept of process related across the board here. How is the concept, you know, other kinds of concepts, and use those as kind of the first step to actually say, hey, do mappings exist? What are those mappings? But actually have concrete problems that you can just walk away from there and work on.
Yeah, so I would actually have that as an issue too, right? So even though it's a follow-on, it's a technical goal issue that we want to address. Concrete problems to work on, you know, what are the open problems, and I guess enumeration of specific tasks to address those.
Those more possible issues. So another possible issue is characterizing the competence or the coverage or whatever of the ontology. There's again been an almost implicit assumption that in an ideal world we would fully map these ontologies to each other, whereas in our everyday life, of course, we get some of the most valuable mappings that are very partial. Like we go to our doctor and we agree on things like elbow pain or can't see right now or something. And I hope that he understands or she understands that. But there's all sorts of medical knowledge that they have that I don't have, and that's why I'm going to them. So even though there are points of agreement and points of mapping, part of the value of going to the doctor is that there are a lot of points of non-mapping.
So do you want to express that in a one sentence?
Well, characterizing the competence and coverage of ontologies is an example, and characterizing the type and reason and utility of different kinds of mappings might be valuable.
Okay.
I don't have a good way to put it.
Competence and coverage.
Okay,
so we probably have maybe three issues so far, kind of. One, two, registries. Well, maybe four registries, libraries.
Well, registries and libraries is not really an issue.
It's not an issue, yeah. Right. But it's a technical thing that we might want to address, but it's not really an issue. So
what
I would say
stuff on the bottom.
I'm not sure. What's on the bottom? No, that's... Mike, I think we want to bring this list of specific tasks to do. Just have that associated with this.
I think I did that right here.
Okay. Remember, our focus is on mapping upper ontologies, right? And so it's going to be, in order to express those mappings, right, you need to use the most expressive language of any of them.
No, I think what you can do is you can characterize the different language features. Like, you ought to be able to express universal and existential quantification. You ought to be able to express modality, modal operators. You ought to be able to express negation. And so, and basically, you ought to be able to express intentional definition, so that the set of black 20th century presidents is not the same as the set of female 20th century presidents, if you want to express that difference. And so basically, think of all the representational features and essentially say, whatever language you use, there should be some way of expressing this if you need to, and then if you want, you can adopt one of these standard languages.
Okay, I mean, so to me, this sounds like, if you will, meta properties associated with languages.
Okay. Yes, yes.
And the key thing there is the properties of a language here, you do need something. I mean, my experience is you definitely need something that is at least first order equivalent.
Right, so that's the exciting thing, which is once you start characterizing it this way, then you can use exactly that same vocabulary to say, in this sub problem, I don't need this and this and this and this.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, we made this comment, meta properties of languages. And then I'll also throw back to Nicola's comment about meta-properties or meta-terminology for making distinctions among our upper ontologies. So, you know, for example, and I actually think it's related to this issue. So property versus relation, property versus quality, right? Intention versus extension, we just mentioned. And so languages that support that, but also in our ontologies, right, we have sort of a certain intent and either expressed, we've had this long discussion about type versus class, intentional notion versus extensional notion. So part of this one, wherever it is the meta properties of the language. I would put it up, and I would say meta properties of, I don't know how you want it, common
language, common vocabulary, or common working vocabulary, something like that.
How about meta-ontology?
Oh, meta-ontology, yeah, meta-ontology.
Yeah, as long as we don't lose the...
It's the ontology of the ontology.
But this is, some of these are language properties as opposed to ontology properties, yeah. Right? So we want to capture both.
We might need to distinguish between like the language properties which you have here, which would be the formal classification of the power of the language that you're using,
yeah.
draw attention to is in Kafka, it's not just one language, but there's sub-languages, for example, going all the way from description logic Kafka up to higher order Kafka, and you choose within those which expressivity you require. Independently of that, I think of the issues that Nicola was raising about meta-ontology and the categories of the language you want to use when you're describing ontology. So there's different levels of representation of the formal language that we have in order to do that representation.
Yeah, so I would say that's two issues.
Also, related to the main point, how to relate the various capital ontologies, I'm not sure. I raised two points. One is listing the basic ontological options, and one was elicit hidden assumptions. I don't know where they go.
Understanding similarities, differences.
What was the other thing you said?
Listing basic ontological options. For instance, the three versus four example, which always goes to this example anyway. Understanding basic ontological assumptions. Or listing basic ontological assumptions. Options.
Meaning what though?
Yeah, I don't know what you mean. What's 3D and 4D? Which version of 3D?
Or for instance, discrete time versus continuous time,
yeah.
Things like that.
Okay. Did we address the meta ontology of language and ontological distinctions here? I'm not sure if we have both, Mike. We talked about the language, so the meta issues in the languages, and then also in the ontology. So we think that those are two different issues.
Oh, I see. How do Kalberg and Vocabulary for expressing the meaning of the term?
That's different from the language expressivity, if you will.
So I should add a whole new issue?
Yeah, I would say that's a different
at the language level, meta properties.
This was related to represent
representation language features.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and this will point back to probably this, right? So you might want to pull this. I would leave that here because the answer is probably no.
Right, it's still an issue.
Yeah, it's still an issue. Other comments on these so far?
This language explicitly, language for what?
So ontology representation language.
I'm nothing.
Pardon?
I'm nothing. Ontology representation, I'm nothing.
Okay, and mapping language. No, leave that there, though. No, leave it there.
Well, it should be ontology representation and mapping language expressive.
Yeah. We don't want to eliminate that yet. New issue.
How it's going to be used.
Okay. How the upper ontology is going to be used?
It will be used by
test cases, use cases.
Test cases. Was there already concrete problems you worked on?
How about mapping generic tasks to various ontologies?
Who's speaking here? What was it then?
Mapping generic tasks to the various ontological features.
A generic task?
Yeah.
What is a generic task?
What are we spending generic tasks? Designing, planning. Diagnosing,
I think a reference to that would be desirable here. So what did you call that? Waterman's list of tasks or something?
Yeah, the dictionary tasks of Waterman.
We don't know that probably, or not everyone does.
What would this be applicable to?
Well, that would point to competency, isn't it?
Okay, so competency or
general level he's talking.
So competencies, test cases.
Oh, you know, actually, so that's kind of like evaluation criteria.
Yeah, yeah, that goes into evaluation too, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if we have to characterize competence, is this a
he's talking about things like searching or categorization or
this is a characterization, right?
The kinds of things
yeah.
and talking about
yeah,
it.
So, okay, maybe we should actually put Waterman, how is it spelled?
Water?
Yeah, Waterman. Yeah, Tom Waterman. Tom
Waterman.
Tasks.
Generic tasks.
Okay, good.
Where do you all see things like reflection, things like standardizing on a vocabulary of this problem took my system 11 real-time seconds, mm-hmm. or my system required four deep back-chaining to solve this, or other sort of meta-level reflection.
But you need to be able to
state and reason about that.
So identical. These are the KPIs.
Metrics, I guess, right?
Or what about ontology? Then
let's measure performance. Like for example, see, I'm not sure how you guys. So in Psych, we just sort of mix these things together because. You know, we're in Texas and we just don't care. So, you know, we put together quirk, you know, so I can, like, ask Psych something like, tell me common sense tests that somebody has asked you in the last 6 months that took you between 10 and 30 seconds to answer and required at least two steps of back jamming. And it'll give me the
list of reasons.
Cool.
I think that is out of scope for comparing
ontology. Well, what I'm thinking is that sooner or later we're going to need that kind of vocabulary in order to interrelate.
So maybe that's under evaluating?
Well, not evaluating the upper ontology.
Evaluating
the application.
It could be, right?
Because insofar as different representational choices impact the reasoning efficiency to get certain tasks done, it's something that will come into play at some point, but frankly, I think it will come later. I think there's a lot more early work to be done understanding everything before you understand the differences, before you can start evaluating.
I agree.
Right.
You don't want to take yourself into a corner.
I think we want to capture it here. We can always throw it away.
I think that what Doug is trying to talk about here, though,
in metrics.
What Doug is talking about here, though, it's the model. This stuff comes down to the ontology of the ontology of the system. Like this reflexiveness is characterizing the system itself. It's characterizing, and that's how you express the capabilities in part, and the assumptions, and all the other things, and in terms of the system. Like in terms of insight, you can express those things. Those are capabilities of not just the particular aspect of an ontology, but also of the
I see. So you can classify these as representation language expressivity features.
Yeah.
Can the language itself talk about how long you've been spending so far trying to prove this?
Right, right. But I would say that's metadata, right? About metadata in different ways, which could be, in fact, symbolic and interpretive metadata, right? But it's like, what queries have I answered today? Well,
so
we don't want to do that.
So our language doesn't have to be sound.
Well, at least not. Right. So it's kind of like metadata associated with the use, if you will, I guess, of the upper ontologies. Well, I wouldn't say system.
I think that's inaccurate, at least with respect to what Doug is saying,
okay.
Because I think what he's saying is that it's part of the ontology itself. The ontology knows about, part of the ontology includes the fact that there exist ontologies. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean,
metadata kind of applies.
It's not, metadata. It's where you push it down to the object level, right? I mean, so ultimately it's...
Just one of the levels is not about yourself.
Yeah.
But I have a feeling that there's going to be disagreement in this room about the way to represent that and the way to deal with it. I mean, we each, in some sense, deal with it in our own ways, in our own systems.
Just dealing with the tool or something.
Well, that's how we deal with it.
Yeah.
So, was that the still the, we don't have a list, we don't have that characterized yet, or?
We do.
Is that this? It's
what you're talking about, the reasoning performance metrics.
Well, it's not just how is the
and I'd say and reflection capability.
Yeah.
No, in the same point, even and reflection capability. Okay.
Reflection capabilities, or you know, meta information about the ontology.
Being able to reflect on the state of your reasoning.
Information about the ontology itself is one thing. Performance metrics is another.
It's two separate things. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
I think that's
yeah.
Right.
And performance again.
And performance is also.
Right, right. I mean,
perform.
I don't understand what that has to do with the
I'm willing to let you put stuff up there that says I'm doing this because I'm interested in aesthetics the way Aristotle would. You should at least tolerate those of us who actually want to solve problems.
No, go on. Much more than I believe these things are very important. Of course, I'm not disputing that. Of course. I'm just saying that we should put them in the right position.
Think of the word. Putting things on the list.
Well, what about the design time versus runtime issues?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, that goes to, but maybe that's more general. Because we know that what you do at development time, you can't necessarily, because it's too expressive, you can't maybe reason against it at runtime. So design time versus runtime, and then reasoning. Performance metrics that come under that property.
Well, I was thinking really wrong. How does this capture the context?
Well, I would say that design time versus runtime, there may be is more general because there may be model simpler model.
So what should be under this?
I would say put reasoning performance metrics underneath that, and along with the expressivity efficiency. That goes right under design time versus run time.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so. Okay. Another issue? Okay.
Yeah, I'd like to ask if you would all agree that we should have a natural language interface at the earliest possible moment for the ontology itself to get that in the mouth.
Well, okay.
Whether it's controlled or something more complex.
Yeah. let's express it a little more generally. So maybe natural language descriptions. I think let's put it up here because Barry, goes to the human readable issue, right?
Oh, so natural language generation as soon as possible, and natural language understanding once we're all done with it.
No, but. But natural language descriptions, and also maybe as a test case, right, or to ground the.
After that, I think there's a lot of work on presenting formal truth in natural language, and it's a very difficult issue. And a straightforward reading of the structure of an axiom for natural language. I wonder how useful that really is, because it's not easy to understand. But I'll